The Pain Podcast is produced by Bloodstream Media, intended for educational and informational purposes, and made possible thanks to our sponsor, Tremo Pharmaceuticals. Visit resethastudy.com to learn more about their work.
Actually, leaders can be a resource in managing chronic pain in the workplace.
Do you ever have one of those days where you wake up and just feel awful? You try to get out of bed, make coffee, and suit yourself up for work, only to realize you just can't do it today. So you climb back into bed and take a sick day. It's bound to happen, even to the healthiest of people. Taking off from work to recover from illness, pain, exhaustion, or attend to your mental health is sometimes necessary. And yet, there are also times we felt pretty crummy and somehow pushed through the pain to be a productive worker. Why is this? Sure, sick days aren't often unlimited, so many people save them for those emergency moments. But does it go a little deeper? Historically, has society created a space to talk about illness, sickness, mental health, and even chronic pain in the workplace?
Does society generally create that? I don't think so.
I feel like it is hard to admit that you're in pain in the workplace.
I think people probably conceal their pain while at work.
Well, that's a resounding no. But have times changed? The pandemic has seen a shift in the way we approach illness in the workplace. Tickle in your nose? Stay home. Some employees are even beginning to see their employers prioritize health and wellness. But will this last? And are those with chronic pain awarded the same benefits? In our final episode of Season 3, we talk with Assistant Professor Dugu Birsik Gulseren about chronic pain in the workplace. We discuss how work environments and culture contribute to the social side of pain and expand upon ways employees and employers can work together to better understand each other's needs, hopefully meeting at that intersection where pain manifests. Hi, I'm Mel Forrest, and you're listening to The Pain Podcast.
My name is Duygu Birsik Gulseren, and I'm an assistant professor at the School of Human Resource Management at York University, Toronto.
This is Duygu, an assistant professor at York University in Toronto. Her research is focused on healthy and safe work and leadership. She is one of the authors of an article titled "When Someone on Your Team Has Chronic Pain," published by Harvard Business Review in July of 2021. Chronic pain affects more than 20% of Americans alone.
Pain is a symptom of many diseases, as well as it's a disease in and of itself.
This symptom or disease affects many people. And due to the pain from long-lasting COVID and recently limited access to healthcare during the pandemic, it's hard not to wonder if the number of those afflicted with chronic pain will continue to rise.
Even before COVID, researchers were making predictions about the possible increase in chronic pain cases. But with the restrictions to accessing the healthcare that came with the pandemic is, I think, the final straw.
As the world saw rising COVID numbers, life and work had to change. So as chronic pain numbers continue to rise, it's clear that organizations and workplaces must begin to shift to meet the needs of their employees.
First of all, chronic pain is a disabling condition, and as significant of the workplace, increased chronic pain rates means increased disability rates for organizations. And of course, organizations have to come with effective ways to manage chronic pain because they cannot ignore the needs of about the 40% of the workforce.
It's estimated that 40% of the workforce experiences chronic pain.
And also, this is relatively less spoken, but many of the employees have dependents with chronic pains. And although that sounds like a non-work-related issue, we know from the work-life interface literature or research, employees' family-related responsibilities are and should be a concern for workplaces as well.
By acknowledging an employee's personal or familial needs, the employer is effectively addressing the multiple factors that contribute to the pain experience and ultimately promoting a better work-life balance. But this isn't a simple shift. Dugu explains how research and science can help change previous workplace narratives around chronic pain.
So in the past, researchers used to think that pain was a symptom of tissue damage, and they used to see pain as a physical experience. But the state of the science in chronic pain supports the biopsychosocial model of pain, meaning a combination of physiological, social, psychological factors altogether affect how we perceive pain.
The biopsychosocial approach to pain. Does this sound familiar?
For example, I conducted interviews with 13 employees who have chronic pain. And two of those employees were at the same age, they were both male, they shared the same diagnosis, and they were doing the exact same job. But the stories that they shared were completely different because their perceptions and management strategies were different. And I think this was because each individual has a unique set of triggers, like social and environmental triggers, and that's why they recognize different triggers and respond to them differently.
As we've covered this season, there are many factors that can contribute to a way a person perceives and experiences pain, social and environmental factors being just two. During the week, people spend a large portion of their time working, so it's no wonder that a person's work environment and culture can have a large effect on the way they perceive or experience pain. And many people with chronic pain experience barriers that make it harder to disclose their pain status or seek treatment.
I can think of two main barriers. One of them is stigmatization, and it's a very important barrier. So when there's stigma, many employees hesitate to disclose, and unfortunately, disclosure is the first step in receiving appropriate accommodation and legal protection as well in the workplace. And I think another barrier is communication. Even if an employee chooses to disclose their pain, it is difficult to communicate the whole experience. Chronic pain is described as an invisible or non-communicable condition in the literature. And because others are unable to see your migraines or your back pain, they have difficulties with appreciating your challenges.
Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. Stigma around chronic pain still exists today. And in the workplace, it can be difficult to communicate and advocate for oneself. As we've discovered and stated on this show numerous times before, pain is personal, and there are many factors that contribute to the overall pain experience. So being tasked with describing this to your employer can be difficult, daunting, and exhausting. Dugu continues describing how and why employees often conceal their pain within the workplace.
From an evolutionary perspective, we develop facial pain expressions to communicate our pain. But for example, when we are in pain, we lower our eyebrows, squeeze our eyes, open our mouths. But of course, your employer or customers would not want to see your facial expression of pain. So therefore, I think employees with chronic pain engage in a lot of emotional labor.
The physical and emotional hurdles that employees with chronic pain endure can be daily. But is there something that employers and leadership within the workplace can do to better understand and help the needs of those in chronic pain?
Leaders have the power and authority to control many aspects of our jobs. Therefore, they have a lot to offer, not just in terms of creating an atmosphere for disclosure, but also changing the job and working conditions entirely. So for example, they can help employees in pain directly by accommodating their needs, listening to them, providing necessary supports. But they can also help employees indirectly by redesigning their jobs to make them pain-friendly, for example, or educating the other members of the organization about pain so that they know how to approach an employee in pain. And more importantly, I think leaders can show social and emotional support by listening to them and making genuine efforts to understand their unique experience.
We talk more about pain in the workplace and how shifting perspective not only helps employees, but also organizations and businesses. when we return from this brief word about our sponsor.
Hi, listeners. I hope you're enjoying this season finale episode for season 3 of the Pain Podcast from Bloodstream Media, made possible by Tremo Pharmaceuticals. If you've been listening, then you already know. My name is Patrick James Lynch. I'm one of the producers of the Pain Podcast, and I have severe hemophilia A. While chronic pain can be caused by many things, if you're like me and have hemophilia, chances are some of your pain might be the result of what's called hemophilic arthropathy, or HA. Tremo was founded with the goal of developing and delivering non-opioid pain therapies for people living with pain. Tremo's RESET HA study is a clinical research study for people who experience joint pain due to hemophilia. The study is evaluating an oral, non-opioid investigational drug designed to be taken once a day to see if it may potentially help relieve joint pain and improve physical function in people with hemophilic arthropathy, or HA. You may be eligible to participate in this clinical research study if you are between the ages of 12 and 75, have been diagnosed with hemophilia A or B, have chronic pain in one or more joints, and do not take opioid medication more than 4 days a week. If you are interested in learning more about taking part in Tremo's RESET HA study, visit resethastudy.com. That's RESETHASTUDY.com to find a study location near you. Reset the way you manage your pain. Visit resethastudy.com today. And thanks so much for listening to season 3 of the Pain Pod.
We talk about how pain is personal. Unfortunately, this fact makes it easy to think that this very personal problem shouldn't affect or be of concern to others. As chronic illness and disabilities advocate Erica Lupinacci states in episode 4,
it's just easier to not have to change.
For organizations and businesses, ignoring employee chronic pain is an option. But as I've learned personally, if you don't acknowledge a problem and allow it to fester, it only gets worse. And if chronic pain numbers are rising, this problem that affects real people is going to get harder to ignore. Assistant Professor Dugu Birsik Gulsarin expands on why addressing chronic pain within the workplace is not only beneficial for employees, but also employers.
Chronic pain is a disabling condition. Not helping with employees in chronic pain is definitely costing organizations in different ways. There are studies showing the financial cost of mismanaging chronic pain in the workplace. And also there are non-financial costs or non-direct costs, such as productivity losses or insurance expenses or time spent outside of organization, like absences, etc. So by helping employees in pain organizations, they're not only fulfilling a moral duty, but they're also helping their workforce to become more productive and happier and healthy.
As organizations and businesses begin to better understand chronic pain and its effects on the workplace, Dugu gives examples on how employees in chronic pain can better advocate for themselves and their needs.
I think employees in pain can do to advocate for themselves. And of course, it starts with knowing your rights. So each jurisdiction is different, but most of the jurisdictions in many countries protect employees with disabilities, and this includes employees with chronic pain. You don't have to disclose your condition, but you can communicate your need. For example, instead of saying, I have chronic pain, please help, saying, I need a standing desk to better perform my job can be more effectively in getting what you need. Also, using resources offered to you is another thing that employees can do. So one of the findings of our research was about the use of organizational resources, actually. So employees were aware of the pain-related resources provided to them by their employers, yet they underused those resources. So if those resources are not meeting your needs, you can give feedback to your employer. And also keep in mind that unless you're working in a very small organization, chances are you're not the only person with chronic pain. So connecting with others in a similar situation can also help you gain voice.
By connecting and speaking to others, you gain voice and you make leaders hear and acknowledge your needs. Understanding and addressing chronic pain shouldn't be the only thing done by employers. Redefining the role of leaders, the ones in charge of making changes, can have long-term positive effects on the way organizations and businesses approach pain. Dugu expands more on this.
I think this argument that leaders don't have a counseling role in the workplace is about how we define leadership. And leadership is actually about understanding, encouraging others to use their potentials in the best way possible. And when you look at leadership from this perspective, social and emotional support is a leader's primary responsibilities. We actually conducted a survey with my co-authors, Brad Sayan, Kevin Calloway, and Nick Turner. And we asked 500 American business leaders about how they could support employees with chronic pain. And this was an open-ended question. We then coded their answers. The funny thing is that the number one theme that emerged from that study was counseling, like listening to the employee and understanding their needs and referring them to appropriate resources. So I think actually leaders can be a resource in managing chronic pain in the workplace.
It's clear that the sociologic components of pain can greatly affect a person's access to care. How society perceives you, where you live, your cultural background, socioeconomic background, race, ethnicity, gender, and even where you work has an effect on your pain experience. To not address and acknowledge these sociologic factors would be a disservice. Because as pediatric hematologist Dr. Amar Zaidi states in episode 1,
the accumulation of those three experiences, the psychologic, the sociologic, and the biologic, at that intersection is where pain manifests. And until you're addressing all three of them, you're not really dealing with the pain properly.
This season, we explored the social side of pain. We heard stories and experiences about implicit and racial bias, expectations from institutions, how chronic illness is viewed and approached, advancements in pain research, and the overall quality of life. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. By understanding that all of these things contribute to the way a person views and experiences pain, not just the biological and psychological components, allows us to begin to understand the full pain experience and what actually makes it so personal. It is the sum total of all of its parts, the biological, psychological, and the sociological. Like Dr. Z said, it's at this intersection of all three where pain manifests. So I want to thank all of our guests this season for sharing their experiences and knowledge and allowing us to travel down these different roads and finally meet at that intersection where understanding and progress for all with pain can begin. The Pain Podcast is written and hosted by me, Mel Forrest, produced by Greg Holtzman, edited by Colby Crow, artwork by Ryan Gielen and Christina Newhard, post-production support from Joshua Sterling Bragg, Rob Bradford, Allison Stoney, and Avra Friedman, and executive produced by Patrick James Lynch. The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and presented by Tremo Pharmaceuticals. Tremo's RESET HA study is a clinical research study for people who experience joint pain due to hemophilia, and you can learn more about it by visiting resethastudy.com. And as always, if you liked this episode, make sure to subscribe, rate, and share the Pain Podcast. Thanks so much for listening, And if you'd like to catch up on other episodes and seasons, visit bloodstreammedia.com or check out the Pain Podcast wherever you listen or stream. Again, I'm Mel Forrest, and we'll catch you next season on the Pain Podcast.